Okay, everyone, good evening. Thank you for joining tonight's Parsha My Life class. This week's class was dedicated by Herman and Leah Schwartz. And it's in memory of Herman and Leah Schwartz. And it was dedicated by Sophia Henderson. She didn't leave anything else. So in memory of Herman and Leah Schwartz, I don't have any more information on the name, but Hashem should give them a great aliyah and much bracha to you for this dedication, for all that you want and all that you need. And it should be a big schus for both those who have you've dedicated it for. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Miyo B'dvarei. Okay, so today's class is a very, very unfinished product. I'm just beginning to work on this subject. I thought this week would be a good week for it, but I didn't get enough time to really sink my teeth into it and really get a good grasp on it. And we discussed this a lot of times, but this is the week to really zoom into it. This week is Parshat Bahar. Bahar is the week of Shemitah, and this year is a Shemitah year. Shemitah is the sabbatical year, the year that you're not allowed to work. So what excites me always is I'm always excited about the times that we're in. So here there's a very special connection because Shemitah is associated very much with Mashiach for a few reasons. Number one, the mitzvah doesn't really apply that much today. Today's mitzvah Shemitah is really, I think according to most opinions, only rabbinic. It's only when you have all the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Because Shemitah, the way the Torah lays out the idea of Shemitah is that you have 6 years, and then the seventh year is Shemitah. And then 6 years, which is the 6 years you can work, and the seventh year you have to let the land be, you know, rest. And then another 6 year we work and so forth. You do this seven times. And at the conclusion of the seventh time, it will give you the 49 years. And after 49 years, the 50th year, is the Jubilee year. It's called Yovel. That's a very, very powerful moment. A special shofar is blasted. This is in addition to the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. This is not on Rosh Hashanah. This happens on Yom Kippur. A shofar is blasted, and at that moment, everything is liberated. Everything goes back to its source. In general, we know that the whole idea of Shabbos is to return. Shabbos is a returning energy. You know, during the week, we get stuck in the sense that we get entangled in this world because our souls are really spiritual, very, very lofty spiritual beings, and our souls come down and need to do certain tikkunim. We need to do certain repairs in the world. But the process of doing a repair is to get invested and getting clothed. And when you become invested and you become enclothed, sometimes you get trapped. So Hashem gives us a free day once a week. He liberates our souls and allows our souls to go back to a spiritual state of existence, a disengagement. So just like it is on the individual, on each and every one of our levels, it's also in the cosmic soul. The Shekhinah is the same like our souls. Just like our souls come down into the world to do repairs, the Shekhinah comes down into the world as well. And the Shekhinah is the mother of all souls. So the collective soul, she comes down and is very much enclosed and invested in the creation. And the result of that, darkened and exhausted and so on and so forth. And every Shabbos, the Shekhinah rises Shabbos. She goes back. She returns. She returns upward into the more sublime levels. The Arizal actually this week in the Parsha, in the Lakutei Torah of the Holy Ari, he says the word Shabbos is bas, has the word bas, which means daughter, and then it has a shin. So what is the significance of bas shin? We know Malchus, which is the Shekhinah, is called the daughter. Because the way it is in the Sefirot and the attributes is that there is Chachma and Bina, father, mother. The six emotions are called son, and Malchus is the girl, is the daughter. So Chachma, Bina, there's an air amp in the six emotions and Malchus. Malchus goes down, the daughter goes down to enliven the world, to enliven the creation, to engage in the world. That's the energy of creation. What happens on Shabbos? Malchus is liberated and she goes back to be with the other spherot that are above creation. She goes down, the feminine energy that is separated from her husband all week, goes back to be with her husband, up above, not with the concealments, not inside the klipot, inside the dark forces. Shin is indicative, says the Ari, of the masculine spheros, which are in three. What's a shin? A shin has three lines. It's Chesed, Gevura, Teferes. That's a shin. Bas is Malchus. Shabbos means that Bas, the daughter, goes up to join the shin, and it becomes Shabbos. So the Bas, the daughter, it's such a cool idea. The Bas, the daughter, which is the Shechina, goes up to into the shin. What does it mean to us? We are also God's daughter. Our souls, and our souls go back into a state of union, a state of we can rejoin our Father in heaven, or we can, you might look at it as rejoining our husband, the masculine dimension of godliness that's Hashem's infinite light. And then we rise up into that union. And that's why Shabbos is the same letters as Tashev, coming back home. It's like a child that leaves home to go do something, goes to work, goes for a job, goes for military service, whatever it is, when a child is drafted into the army, you can see, you know, parents are worried, scared, and it's going to be. And the child returns. And why is he going to the army? He's going to do some kind of a repair that is necessary. There are evil guys. There are bad guys. They need to be destroyed. They need to be taken care of. Yourself. But going to the army is a very dangerous place. So the parents don't sleep at night because the child is out. And then when the child comes back safely, uninjured and unharmed, it's a great joy. So during the week, we're like going out into military service. We're going to fight the Klipas. We're going down into the world to fight with the Yetzirah, to battle with the demons of the world. And then every Shabbos, there is an ascending. There is a going up. There is a return. That happens every Shabbos. It also happens on Shemitah. Because Shemitah is also called Shabbos. It's the seventh year, a time of rest. That's why we do the same thing on Shemitah. We retract, we disengage. We go back, or we go out of the world and return more into a more spiritual place. And but what does the Pasuk say regarding Shemitah? Not only do we rest, but the land should rest. V'shav saha aretz, the land should rest. Anybody familiar with the little Kabbalistic element knows that Malchus, the attribute of Malchus, is called daughter. It's also called the supernal earth because it's the last and final sphera of the divine attributes. It's the lowest, so it's called earth. If you look at creation, you see something interesting. When Hashem says that the world should come into existence, it keeps on saying, let the earth give forth. Let the earth give forth, vegetation. Let the earth give forth animals, living creatures. What does that mean? The earth. It's referring to the Shekhinah, Malchus, because Malchus is called earth, and Malchus gives forth. When we say the earth should rest, v'shav sa'aretz, the land should rest, it's referring to not just the land of Israel, the physical land of Israel down here, but the spiritual soul of the land of Israel, that is the Shekhinah, also rises upward into a much higher state. So let's understand that. If the Shekhinah rises upward to a much higher state, which means a state of more unification with the infinite source and less engagement and less investment in the finitude and in all the dark elements of creation. So the derivative of the Shekhinah, which is the land of Israel, the whole world is really a product of the Shekhinah. But the more specific, direct, what you might call representation of Shekhinah in this world is the land of Israel. That's why it's such a holy land. Over there, that's called Malchus. You know, the Beis HaMikdash Shalamata is Mechuvan Keneged Beis HaMikdash Shalamayla. The lower temple is is exactly under the upper temple. Yerushalayim Shalmata, you see the speech sages speak about it. Jerusalem of below, and Yerushalayim Shalmaila, Jerusalem of above. And then you'll have Eretz in general, the land of Israel above, which is the Shekhinah, and the land of Israel down here. The land of Israel is in exile. During the time of Golas, for sure, the land of Israel is in exile. But in the year of Shemitah, as the Shekhinah rises and is elevated into a much higher place, so to the land of Israel is elevated. So to all the people that live in the land of Israel elevated. And so to all Jewish souls who are all, again, entities of that land, or even if we're not living in Eretz Yisrael, all Jews across the world, even if we're not living in Eretz Yisrael, have a much greater spiritual capacity this year because we're much closer to our source. The rest of the time, all the other 6 years, we're in a state of more of a state of projection outward. Okay, so the returning element, the tshuva element, happens every Shabbos. The bas, the daughter, goes into the shin. The shafsa aretz, it happens in Shemitah. But what is the greatest elevation ever? Happens when? On the 50th year, on the Jubilee year, on the Yovel year. Because what does the pasuk say then? The shaftem ishalach izasai. Everybody returns back to their home. And physically, in the land of Israel, all real estate property went back to the original owners. Every single transaction was canceled regarding real estate. Think about that. Anybody that ever sold property, besides today's days, it wouldn't apply. Talking about people who received their inheritance when they came to Eretz Yisrael, everybody got a land. This belonged to your family. You can sell it, but every sale of real estate property in the land of Israel was really a rental. It was a long-term lease. It was never really a sale, because when the Yovel year would come, all lands would go back to the original owner, and then you can release it again. Because the connection of the person to the land that God has given the Jewish people, and everybody got a piece of land, is inherent, and if it's inherent, it's absolute, and if it's absolute, you can't sever it. You can't disconnect. Temporarily, it can be covered up. It can be blocked, and that would mean spiritually as well. Our connection to the Shekhinah, our connection to our soul root, can, God forbid, disconnect and cover that up to a point where we can sell the land to someone else, which means disassociate ourselves from the land. But what happens in the Yovel year? All land returns to its original owner. That means we reconnect to the land, everybody to the original land. And also, another thing that happened, all slaves are liberated. There's no more servitude. Everybody goes back home. So you see, there's this enormous power of return, of tshuva, of a reabsorption. Everything is going and reconnecting to source. And that happens on the 50th year. Now, according to biblical law, these systems are connected one to each other. In other words, the seven-year Shemitah is also connected to the idea that it should be part of a cycle of 49 and then the 50th. And then you do 49, then you do the 50th, and so on and so forth. This is that cycle. Hypothetically, Shemitah could be applicable today. Because by Shemitah, it doesn't say anywhere that you have to have, if Jews live in the land, you have to be in the land of Israel. But here you are in the land of Israel, and you have land in the land of Israel, you have to let the land rest on the seventh year. However, here's the thing. Yovel, the Jubilee year, doesn't apply today's days. And that is because there is a stipulation that states in the Torah that the Jubilee year, the Yovel year, halachically, which also means the spiritual quality of the year, can only take effect on physical planet Earth. In other words, the concept exists in the spiritual world, but for it to take effect and manifest in this world, such a high level of holiness that can suction everything back up, repair every disconnect, and bring everything back, it's like a cosmic tshuva on such a high level, can only be affected when all Jews are living in the land of Israel. So since the time when the 10 tribes were sent into exile, which was whatever, so 100 years before the destruction of the first temple, we lost that state of all 12 tribes, most of the Jews living in the land of Israel. So therefore, there's no more Yovel here. Once there's no more Yovel here, it already throws the whole thing off its... So even if there is Shemitah, it's an argument if Shemitah today's days is biblical or only rabbinic. It's a question. So it's not so simple. So I mentioned that Shemitah is connected to Mashiach. Why? Simply on a simple level. In order for us to be able to keep Shemitah according to biblical law, that is really only going to happen when Mashiach is here. And then all the inhabitants are going to live in the land of Israel. And we once learned this in a class. It's really, really spectacular. The Rebbe gives a much deeper explanation. What does it mean all the inhabitants should be living on it? The Rebbe says there's various different levels on it. The highest level of all the inhabitants living in the land of Israel can only be after the resurrection. Because that's going to bring all the Jewish people of all the generations. Question is, what do we mean by all the inhabitants? All the Jews alive today in the world? Or do we mean all souls? If we mean all souls to create the ultimate holiness, you need to have all the Jewish people from all the generations. That's going to be. So in a sense, even in the time of King Solomon, even in the time of King David, even in the time when they had all the Jews living in the first 800 years that the Jews went into the land of Israel, from when Joshua and Yeshua brought the Yidden in until the days of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, until that time, we never had really, not halachically, but there were deeper understanding, all the inhabitants living on the land. When Mashiach will come, it will be all the inhabitants after the resurrection. So we can imagine the holiness of the power of Yovel and the power of Shemitah in general during that time. Add to that, the Rebbe also mentions, when we say all the inhabitants should be on the land, what's called the land? So we know the land that Hashem initially promised, if Eretz Yisrael is a living organism, it's not just a what we call a dead land. It's a life, it's a manifestation, it's a physical body for the Shekhinah. So we can understand that it's a living entity. Israel is alive. The soil is alive. But what energy does it possess? It's a land of seven nations, which we know it because it manifests the seven spherot. Because we know inside the land is Malchut, but Malchus is a recipient of all the seven attributes. They all flow into Malchus. So it's a land of seven. But when Hashem promised Avram Avinu the land of Israel, what did he promise him? A land of 10 nations. But that was never fulfilled until the Messianic era. Because when Jews went into Eretz Yisrael, we only conquered the land of seven, not the land of 10. So there's another three provinces which are going to be added to the land of Israel only in the days of Mashiach. And then Israel is going to be a full land. So what's going to happen? When there is a stipulation by the Torah that says that in order for these laws to apply, it has to be kol yoshevei ha'olam, all the inhabitants have to be on the land. So now, what's going to be added in the days of Mashiach, in addition to the fact that all Jews alive today are going to come back to Israel, as we said earlier. But more than that, all the Jews from all souls from Adam, from Adam Arisha, all neshamas, from Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu, till the very last Jew, all the Jews, from all the generations, everybody will be resurrected, everybody will be in the land of Israel. But there's another thing. Until now, even when we were in the land of Israel, we weren't Aleha on the full land, because we were only on the partial land. Now, there was another lacking, another deficiency that was even in the time of the temple. Let's put it this way. There is lights and there is vessels. The vessel is the land. The light are the inhabitants of the land. The souls that live in the land. Those are the lights, the people. What's a country without its people? Take a look at the land of Israel. We know that for thousands of years it lay desolate. It lay in ruins. There was nothing to it. And God, it's one of the promises that God makes in the rebuke, in the Teichacha. And I'm not sure if it's in Bichul Kaisai, the one that we're going to read next week, or the rebuke that is in Deuteronomy and Parshas Kisavim. So there, in these two places, but in one of them, it says that, you know, it speaks about that the land will be desolate. So it says that it's a curse. Your holy land will be desolate, but it says it's a blessing in disguise. And in the curse, there is a blessing. What's the blessing? That no other people will ever be able to settle the land of Israel. And we know that once you kick the Jews out and it becomes without Jews, the land dies. The land doesn't cooperate. So you see, throughout all the time, the Crusaders went up, the Arabs went, and it was until the Jews came back. When the Jews came back in the early, the late 19th century and the early 20th century, when the population started growing, the land sprang to life. The vineyards came alive. The whole land is pumping with life, with energy. It's unbelievable what's happening in the land of Israel. And that's nothing compared to the life that's going to happen once Mashiach is revealed. But as much as the land of Israel was ever alive, it was like a body without a head. Because the three intellectual powers, the Moichnim, the Chachma Bina Das, which are those three other lands that are supposed to be part of the land of Israel, were never connected. Those lands exist, but they didn't exist. Hashem didn't put the wiring together to connect them to the land of Israel. So spiritually, that energy wasn't there. So we had some Jews living on some of the land. So we had a partial vessel and a partial light. When Mashiach will come, we will have all the lights, because we will have all the souls from all the generations. Plus, we're going to have all the 10 countries. Make up the proper vessel. And then the dynamics of that spirituality and holiness will be off the charts, like we've never had before. So pretty exciting Parshas Bahar. And imagine what it's going to feel like on Shemitah when you wake up the first day in Shemitah and your soul is soaring. It's like you wonder, like, what happened? Why is it like last year I couldn't feel this? And this year I open, today I'm Shemitah, I'm opening a prayer book and I'm like, like, you know, the spiritual suction just takes you in into suddenly with a little bit of effort and you're singing, you know. It's really going to be a year of song. That's what it's going to be. It's Shabbos. What's Shabbos? Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos. Shabbos is a time of singing. So, as one of the great Hasidic masters, he wrote a book called Siddurei Shel Shabbos, and it's literally a classic for Shabbos. Not such a hard book to learn. It's actually it was one of the first Hasidic Sfarim I learned when I was beginning my journey into Hasidism. So his sefer Siddurei Shel Shabbos, a fasting sefer, it says about him that he would literally become taller every Shabbos. A head taller, literally. People saw he didn't look the same. He was like, he shut up. His mitzvah was Shabbos, and his entire energy was Shabbos. He was incredible. You know, you saw every tzaddik has different things. At him, it was Shabbos. And just one second. So he brings a story about him. One second over here. I thought it was really cool. Give me just one second. Just give me just one. I can't believe it. I'm not finding it here. Just give me a second. I want to say the story correct. I don't want to botch it up. Oh. He said, if I would have, that's what he said. If I would have a pleasant voice, so then the entire Shabbos, I wouldn't do anything else from when Shabbos enters to the Matzah Shabbos. I wouldn't study Torah. I wouldn't do anything. All I would do was sing songs the entire time. I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't pray. And I definitely wouldn't sleep. I would only sing. Obviously, he had to pray, but his prayer would also be a song. So you can imagine what Shemitah is. You know, the whole year is Shabbos. And then there's Shabbos. And then there's the Jubilee year. So that's one connection of Shemitah to what, to the days of Mashiach. Simply, it's a mitzvah that we don't really have today in the way we should. But there is something else, which is very special. And that is based on a passage in the Talmud that I read to you already a few weeks ago. And that is that the Talmud says in Daf Tzadik Zayin, over here, about the period of Mashiach, when Mashiach comes. So I mentioned to you that the Talmud connects the coming of Mashiach to a seven-year period. Shemesh and David Ba, right? What's going to happen the first year? What's going to happen the second year? Page 97, Tractate Sanhedrin, on the top of the first side. And then it says, in the sixth year, there will be rumors that Mashiach is coming. In the seventh year, there will be wars, which is being fulfilled this year with the Ukrainian and Russian war. Hopefully that this is it. B'motzer Shvi is Ben David Bo. At the conclusion of Shemitah, Mashiach comes. I'm still trying to insist that that should be considered this year. That the conclusion of this year is already Matzah Shemitah. From the Marsha, however, it implies that it's not this year, it's next year. Because he asks the question. The Marsha is one of the great commentary on Midrashic Gemara. All the Agadata, all the, you know, not halachic study, but Midrashic study. He wrote on all of Shas, but he's like exceptional when it comes to Midrashic interpretation and explanation. So the Marsha asked the question. The Talmud begins with the words, Shavuasha ben David ba, the sabbatical that Mashiach comes, which implies the... What does a Shavua mean? Not sabbatical. The seven-year period. Shavua means a, just like the Shavua can mean a week, Shavua Tov, a good week. Shavua in terms of, can also mean a seven-year period, just like a seven-day period. So he asked the question, if it says over here that Mashiach comes b'matzah Shemitah, which means in the eighth year, so how do you call it, the one before that, Shavua Sheben David Ba, the Shemitah that Mashiach comes? It's not in this Shemitah, it's going to be the next Shemitah. So he explained, since the reason he's coming on the eighth year, which is the first year, is because it follows a seven-year period of preparation, you can already say the Shemitah, the Shavua that Ben David Ba. So you see clearly from the Marsha that the Marsha learns, not the way I want to have it now, to say it's still this year, but that the Marsha says it's the eighth year. Meaning, when we say b'matzah Shemitah, it means the year following Shemitah, which is going to be the year 5783. Again, but I have to make a very, very important disclaimer. And that is that Mashiach can come any second. And we hope, and for example, we speak so much about Mashiach comes in the month of Nisan. That's an opportune time. It can happen every moment. The month of Nisan is a more conducive time. So the most conducive time for Mashiach to come is in the conclusion of the Shemitah. So, all right. So that's the subject I wanted to talk about. Why Matzah Shemitah? And the reason I thought, because this year is Shemitah. Plus, it's Parshas Bahar, which speaks about Shemitah. So perhaps we can crack the code and try to figure out why is the most opportune time for Mashiach to come. Again, it can either mean now already, the end days of Shemitah, or the entire next year, because it's the year following Shemitah, or any year following a Shemitah period. Okay. So let's explore that a little bit. Does anybody give any explanation on that? So first, a few weeks ago, we read um, The parsha is called Parsha Shmini. Vayhi bayom haShmini was on the eighth day. No, I'm sorry, not that part. I'm sorry. Parsha Tazria, just 3 weeks ago. And in Parsha Tazria, it says, the mitzvah David b'nei Yisrael lemer isha ki Tazria, when a woman gives birth, the old Zachar, she gives birth to a boy, v'tamashivas yamim, it says she should be impure for 7 days. Ki yamei nidas devoisa, like the time of a menstruation, titma she should be tamim. In other words, childbirth makes a woman impure with the same type of an impurity that she would have. Okay. Then it says, ubayayim hashmini, on the eighth day, yimoil b'sar alos. If it's a boy, so we know that a baby boy needs to have a bris, needs to have a circumcision. When do you do the circumcision? On the eighth day. So one of the great commentators, which was also a great Kabbalist, Reb Chaim ben Attar, the Or HaChaim, gives a very interesting explanation on this passage. And he says that this whole thing, because really I want to say, the Torah is telling you the laws of a woman being impure, and that she has to bring, and if it's a boy, if it's a girl, what's her level of impurity, how long, what's the duration of time, and how does she get out of that impure state? So every woman had to come after childbirth and bring a sacrifice. Bring birds, sheep, birds, whatever. That's what we're discussing. This whole idea that on the eighth day you should circumcise the child doesn't belong here. There's a mitzvah of bris milah, which is a parshas lech lecha already, Hashem gives to Avraham Avin. If you want to tell me about bris milah, give it to me anywhere else in the Torah. Where does it come in over here? He's telling me the laws of, because you see all these parshios from the middle of Shmini, Tazria Metzaira, are talking about kosher, non-kosher, pure and impure. The mitzvah of circumcision is an independent mitzvah, nothing to do with purity and impurity. You're right. One can argue and say, since we're talking about a baby boy being born, over here's where the Torah tells you, what should you do with the boy when he's 8 days old? But it doesn't belong there. But according to the Or HaChaim's interpretation, we understand that it very much does, because he says there's a very deep meaning over here. We're not just talking about a woman giving birth in the regular sense. It's talking about the Jewish people birthing the Mashiach. The Isha, the woman who's giving birth, is referring to the birth of Mashiach, and that's what means a boy is being born, because the uniqueness of this redemption and Mashiach is that he's going to be reigning forever. His kingdom is going to be forever and ever. We discussed last week the power of Mashiach, the power of Yechida, that infinite power. And therefore it lasts forever. It can't be interrupted. And that's hinted to in the fact that he's a boy, the fact that it represents the concept of strength. It's the woman who gives birth. The woman is Israel, the Jewish people. And he explains that since the redemption is going to come as a result of all the mitzvot and all of our work that we've done of thousands of years, that's going to produce this incredible birth, the birthing of this great redemptive, not just power, but person who's going to embody that incredible power. That's the boy that's being born. He says this, that it says 7 days she should be impure. This is alluding to what the Talmud says, the 7 year period before Mashiach comes. So it's interesting, because in the Torah, the birth happens first and then the impure days come after. But the way the Or HaChaim learns it, the 7 day impurity is part of the process of birth. It's as Mashiach is being born, there's a 7 year time of extreme pain and suffering in the world, which we can basically look at the last couple of years as pretty much qualified for this, with all that we've been through. So let's read his interpretation. And he says, "Va'amr avitam, kan ramaz." Here it's a remez. Tikun, asher yasa Hashem lahasik b'chinas hazochar. How is Hashem going to help us in the process to bring about this male soul, which is Mashiach's soul? Ki zayin yishanim yechoynein chevelei Mashiach. The birth pangs of Mashiach are going to happen throughout 7 years. Ka'amram zal Sanhedrin tzadik zayin. So he brings our passage that we've just read. Shehu Asher ben David ba. What are all the calamities that are going to happen during the 7-year period leading up to Mashiach? Liyasram ulezakakam. And this, all these occurrences are all part of a purification process that purifies and cleanses the world and makes Israel, the Jewish people, also worthy for the redemption. And that's the idea of this impurity. He is connecting the suffering and the pain to an element of impurity. Why? Because really all suffering and pain come from the unholy side. It could be acting as an agent of God, but after everything is said and done, God is sweetness and bliss and goodness. So suffering and pain is involved, can only be as long as there's still bacteria in the world, as long as there's klipa in the world. And that's the impurity of those 7 years. When it says 7 days, it means 7 years. Okay, now we understand why the Torah right over here puts in, even though it wouldn't belong over here, by Yom HaShmini, the 8th day, he should be circumcised. What's circumcision, he explains? Circumcision is the removal of the orla, which the orla represents the klipa, the foreskin, which represents a cover of godliness and an obstacle, a cover. That's the klipa. And what is the coming of Mashiach? When all the klipa, this ruach atuma, avim and aretz, when the spirit of impurity God is going to remove from the earth, when Hashem is going to peel away everything that obscures and hides godliness. Pidish, what does it mean? She'achar avor shev hashanim, after the 7 years pass, b'tchilas yoyim hashmini, in the beginning of the 8th day, which is nice to hear that if, even if it's next year, it's in the beginning of the 8th, of the 8th day, yom oil b'sar or losai, should circumcise the flesh of his foreskin. Why? Ki oz yavid Hashem p'chenasa orla m'ha oilam. God is going to remove the arla, the foreskin, from the entire world. That which covers the divine from the entire world. The chesiv, it says in the pasuk, it brings a verse from Zechariah, from Zechariah, v'esruach atumye avim in ha'aretz, the spirit of impurity I'm going to remove from the earth. V'zeh yeh b'shana shmini, this is going to happen in the 8th year. V'yeduah u'b'chinas ha'arla shehi ha'klipa, that arla is the klipa. So now we have a little bit of an understanding why Mashiach comes the 8th year. What's Mashiach? Mashiach is a bris. Mashiach is, for thousands of years, the world has an arla, a global arla. What's an arla? A cover on the divine, a cover on godliness. We can look at it as simply, let me give it a little bit of an explanation. The arla, Hashem is the male. The mashpia, the worlds of the female. And the connection between the male and the female is through the bris. The arla represents that even if there is hashpa coming from God to the world, it's covered and concealed and it's not revealed. So all in other words, God can be pumping life into this world continuously, being continuously engaged in giving life, and yet it's concealed and blocked. The world feels itself independent and separated, and as a result of that, all unholiness and all rebellion takes place, and all garbage and all. So the removal, and that's why we know one of the promises that it says in the days of Mashiach, it says Umal Hashem Elokecha es levavcha, that God is going to circumcise your heart. It's all one circumcision. It's a circumcision taking place on every level of existence, including on our clogged hearts. That we can't feel godliness, even though we study, we learn, we know, but it doesn't penetrate because there's a block. God is going to unclog. That's Mashiach. Mashiach is the cosmic unclogging of every blockage. And everything will connect. So when is the moment of, so everything goes back to the mitzvah. When is the mitzvah of bris milah? When a baby is born on the 8th day. So that's the connection of why Matzah Shemitah Mashiach comes. It's associated with the idea that Matzah Shemitah is number 8. Shemitah is 7. Matzah Shemitah is number 8. And that's when you have a bris. So the world will experience the bris, and that's the revelation of Mashiach. That's the Or HaChaim. So now we have, what we have over here is that we understand why it has to be an interesting explanation, why Mashiach comes at the end, because that's bris time. When do you go to the bris? On the 8th day? Mashiach is the bris. But that doesn't explain why the 8. That only explains what Mashiach is the bris, is the circumcision. So he reveals himself. Ben David comes when? At the time of the bris. But why? And we also know who shows up together with Mashiach? Eliyahu HaNavi. Why does Eliyahu HaNavi come? Because who comes to every bris? Eliyahu HaNavi comes to the bris. So of course Eliyahu has to show up by the grand bris. The grand bris for the entire world. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be there, bringing Mashiach, bringing the revelation. The Maral of Prague gives already a little bit of an explanation in this idea of why the 8th. So the Maral says, this concept we discussed all the time. We said this so many times. But here it's just nice to see it in the words of the Maral. Yeshloch Ladas, this is in a commentary, the Maral's commentary on Sanhedrin. You should know, ki ein ra'u l'mashiach rak ha-mispar shu achar ha-shiva. The only number that is appropriate for Mashiach is the number that's after 7. The only number that is like the only number that fits with Mashiach, that is appropriate, that clicks with Mashiach. He doesn't say number 8. The main idea is that it's not 7. It's after 7. It's above and beyond 7. Why? That's why it doesn't say on the 8th year Mashiach will come. Could have said the 8th year. Doesn't say that. B'matzah Shemitah ben David. It's associated with the fact that it's Matzai. It's the end of. It's when Shemitah, when the 7 is going out, that's when Mashiach comes. Why? V'zehu madregas ha-Mashiach. This is the level of Mashiach. L'mi sheyeda madregas shel Mashiach. Anybody knows how special Mashiach is. If you know the madrega, the level of Mashiach, and his supernal quality of how great he is, you will understand why Mashiach can only come after 7. Why? Because the madrega, the qualities of this world, this world is a world of 7. The qualities of this world is 7. The world is created 7 days. And then there is 7, right? There is time, space is 7, 6 directions in the middle, and so on and so forth. The nations in the world, 7 nations in the land of Israel, they're the 7 root nations, 70 nations are offshoots, it's all associated with number 7. 7 colors in the rainbow, 7 seas, 7 continents, 7 musical notes, and probably many, many 7 heavens, according, right? 7 is the number of creation. Umipnei ki madregis. In other words, nature is 7. Even though Shabbos, which is such a holy day, is, and Shabbos is not nature. Shabbos is associated with God. Shabbos is revealing the godliness of nature, uncovering the premius of the world. But it's all part of the system. He says, Umipnei ki madregis ha-Mashiach. Since Mashiach's quality is above this world, he's not part of this world, he's above this world. This world is founded on the number of seven. Hem Shivas Yemei Bereishis. These are the 7 days of creation, or sometimes referred to as Shivas Yemei HaBinyan, the 7 days of construction. And that's why the quality of Mashiach, who is above this world, who achar mispar shiva, is after the number of seven. In other words, not so much emphasizing so much eight, but not seven, above seven. Outside, Mashiach is out of this world. So therefore, he waits for a year that represents out of this world. We concluded this seven, and now we're... That's exciting. So here you have already some explanation to this concept. And that's why we discussed so many times how all godly revelation is always associated with number eight. Eight is the number after seven. Even Shavuos, even the giving of the Torah was number eight, because you counted 7 weeks, seven times seven. And on the 50th day, which the 50th is number eight. And we spoke earlier about what? Seven is always special. The seventh day is Shabbos. Seven years, Shemitah. But then what happens with Shemitah? Seven times seven is 49. And when is the Jubilee year? When is Yovel? That super, super, super holy year. When is that? Number eight. 50. 50 is the eighth. It's the day after seven. That's the idea. It's the Sunday after the Shabbos. It's the day after, but not a new. It's, in other words, it's not. It's when the day after is not just regular new count. It's when the day after is the cherry on top. That's the idea. It's the perfection. It's the godly that's outside of. And that's why we discussed all the time that most of the prophecies regarding the future will start with the word "us." Us is the Aleph, Alufi Shalaylam, that's on the Zion above the seven. So what I wanted in this class was really to do a whole lot of more research into this concept of Mashiach's association with the eighth year, with Matzah Shemitah, Ben David Ba. And I didn't get to do that. I wanted to do more than the Maral and the Rechaim and whatever. I did find over here, this is very interesting, someone gave me a book last week. Rabbi Genuth was here from Israel, and he gifted me with this book from Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsburg, and it's a year on Shemitah. It's a year, and he gave me a bunch of English books. The English books I find hard reading in the English books, but the Hebrew books I enjoy. So I was reading a piece here, and the first piece that I read is discussing at the end of this at this chapter the idea of why Mashiach comes b'matzah Shemitah. At the conclusion of Shemitah. And I find something really, really fascinating that is particularly connected to me personally. In this, I got excited when I saw it. So he's talking over here a long discussion of what's the spiritual dynamics of Shemitah and how is the spiritual dynamics of Shemitah different than Shabbos. We discussed earlier that in Shabbos, it's an elevation and Shemitah is an elevation. Everything is returning. But we know that the holiness of Shabbos is holier than Shemitah. Because on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do, we refrain from all work, all 39 types of primary work. We don't do on Shabbos. Not just, which include land work, which include working the land. On Shabbos, we're not allowed to plant, we're not allowed to plow, we're not allowed to harvest, cutting, you know. We're not allowed to do all those works. Shemitah is also prohibited, but Shemitah is only prohibited in land work. You're allowed to cook on Shemitah, which you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. You're allowed to make a fire on Shemitah. Can't do that on Shabbos. On Shabbos of Shemitah, you're not allowed to do all the stuff you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, but on a regular day in Shemitah, it's only prohibited land work. So what's the reason? But on the other hand, the Torah calls it Shabbos. So he quotes some Kabbalistic teachings, which I looked it up. In the, where is it over here? I left it, I guess, over there. In the writings of the Holy Ari, in this week's Parsha, which I mentioned to you earlier, why when he explains why Shabbos is called Shabbos. But he explains, just very briefly, that the reason why Shabbos has more prohibition than Shemitah is because it's related to the idea that everything on Shabbos, as we spoke earlier, Shemitah, the whole concept of Shabbos and Shemitah is Aliyasa Olamos. On the seventh year, everything goes back. It's a return. In creation, God is projecting outward, and he's pushing the creation to be an entity outside of him. So God is, in a sense, distancing energy from inside himself to go outward to engage and to create an outside world. That's the energy flow during the weekday. And that's why it's called descending energy. Energy that's descending lower and lower and lower. In other words, manifesting more into definitions, constrictions, and limitations. And obviously, at the very, very tail end of that, it's going to be going into very dark places. Because as a result of the constrictions and definitions, at a certain point, it starts becoming very, very, very ungodly and very. What happens on Shabbos? A suction. Everything is returning. Everything is moving back into its source. So therefore, in Kabbalistic writings, and Kabbalah discusses that Shabbos is Aliyasa Olamos. All worlds are rising. So the Arizal makes an interesting differentiation. He says that on Shabbos, everything else, the entire cosmic order rises. And the way things rise is that, let's say, our world, we are the physical world. And we are created. Our physical world is created from the energy. Let me just give it. In general, it's discussed that the four worlds. Atzilus, the world of emanation. Bria, the world of creation. Yetzirah, the world of formation. And Asiya, the world of completion. But we know that in Asiya itself, there is the inside of the world, which are the spherot. In every one of these four worlds, there's the 10 attributes. God's, the energy, the divine energy, which manifests as 10 attributes. The physical actual creation is created by the last of those 10 attributes called Malchus of the world of Asiya. So there is, again, there's 10 sephirot in each world. The Malchus of each world is really the creator of that world. The higher levels is the energy that is in a state of preparatory energy, lowering itself, adjusting to create the world. But every world is created from the Malchus of that world. So we who inhabit the world of the material, the physical world, the world of physical time and space that we are in, we are created from the Malchus of the world of Asiya. So what happens on Shabbos? The Malchus of the world of Asiya goes up to the Netzach Hod Yesod. In other words, our world rises to the Netzach Hod Yesod. The Netzach Hod Yesod rise to Chesed Gevura Teferes. The Chesed Gevura Teferes rise to Chachma Bin Adas. The Chachma Bin Adas of the world of Asiya goes up to the Malchus of the world of Yetzirah, of the higher world. And then the Malchus of Yetzirah goes up to the Netzach Hod Yesod. The Netzach Hod Yesod goes up to the Chesed Gevura Teferes of Yetzirah. In other words, everything is going up a notch. Everything is moving higher and higher and higher. And that inward journey where everything is like being pulled back into its source goes all the way into Atzilus. Malchus of Atzilus goes up into the Netzach Hod Yesod. The Netzach Hod Yesod goes up to Chesed Gevura Teferes. Chesed Gevura Teferes goes up to Chabad. And Chabad goes up into Keter, into the crown, which is really returning back up all the way into the Orient Sof, into the infinite level. This is the, and it's all one chain. It's like a train pulling everything up. Everything, and when one car moves, it pulls the next one. So everything is in a state of elevation. And that's why we don't even have to be so sensitive, but we can feel it. That Shabbos, the world feels different. The street feels different. It just doesn't feel the same. The environment, just physicality, has a certain, obviously, the more sensitive you are, the more you sense it, but it just doesn't have the same, the material physical world is not as blocking on Shabbos like it is during the week. For tzaddikim, it's a whole different reality. But even for regular people, it feels different. Shabbos, everything feels different. Because it is different. So the Ari makes mainly two distinctions now. And this, so he says that happens on Shabbos and that happens on Shemitah. But there is two distinctions. I'm not going to talk about one distinction now. because it's not important from really what we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about, I think what he makes is the first distinction. And that is in on Shabbos, this elevation takes place, as we said, from the world of Asiya to the world of Yetzira, the world of Yetzira to the world of Bria, and the world of Bria to the world of Atzilus, and the world of Atzilus all the way up into the Orein Sof that's above the four worlds. That's what happens on every Shabbos. On Shemitah, he says, the whole system rises, but it only goes up to Malchus of Atzilus. That's the idea of a Shafsa Ha'aretz. Everything goes up into Malchus. But the Malchus itself of the world of Atzilus doesn't rise higher. So in Atzilus itself, there isn't a retraction into the Orein Sof all the way up. It stops by Malchus of Atzilus. It's still in it, and that's the reason why we're not allowed to do land work. That's associated. The land is Malchus. So we're not allowed to do work in the land, but we're allowed to do other work. Shabbos, when the elevation is happening, even on levels higher than Malchus, because everything, even in Atzilus, everything is going up to the Orient. So you have to cease all work, but all creative work. But on Shemitah, since the Aliyah, the elevation is only to Malchus of Atzilus and not higher, that's the reason why this work is prohibited, but the other 39 types of work are you're allowed to do in Shemitah. That's a teaching of the Holy Ari. Now Rabbi Ginsburg gives a deeper Hasidic understanding to this idea. And he explains, so what does it mean? What are you supposed to do in Shabbos when you retract? The concept of Shabbos is us tis'ane gal Hashem. That's when you're supposed to quell in godliness. That's when you're supposed to delight in godliness. So on Shabbos, we know it's not just a time of eating extra food. Shabbos is a time of engaging in meditative prayer. As we spoke earlier from the Siddurah Shel Shabbos, it's a time of singing. It's a time of cleaving to God. During the weekdays, we also pray. But during the weekday, he explains the prayer. This is discussed in Chassidus. I mean, I'm saying he explains. It's not him explaining. It's discussed in Maimonides, but I, in its connection to Shemitah, I saw it in the book here. So, which is really just a very beautiful insight, that during the weekday, our connection to God comes in a manner of contemplation, meditation. You know, you study something, you try to understand it. You're working through comprehension and understanding. Shabbos is the experience of vision. What you can understand through long, long study and then thinking and comprehending, you can see it on Shabbos. That's why during the weekday, prayer is associated with Bina, which means understanding. And Shabbos, prayer is associated with Chachma. Chachma, which means wisdom, really means spiritual vision. So in the weekday, we can hear, it's like hearing, we can hear about godliness. On Shabbos, we can see godliness. That's why any person who makes the effort to try to pray slowly on Shabbos and to delve deep into the words and to give it a little bit more thinking, a little more mindfulness, can experience divinity during your prayer on Shabbos on a much more powerful way that you can with the same amount of effort during the week. Because during the week, you're outside. During the week, put it this way, because during the week, there's blockages. There's a lot of concealments. There's a lot of partitions. Because we said earlier, God creates the world to be distant from Him. So when you're distant, you can comprehend godliness. You can't have an up and close look. But on Shabbos, you can vision. You can see. Literally, you can see. Obviously, you have to activate the eyes of your soul. It's not a physical vision. And he says it's really three levels. The lowest level is contemplation. Higher than the level of contemplation is what? Is vision. You're looking. And then what happens as a result of looking at something? And when you look at something and it's beautiful, it's magnificently beautiful, you can reach a point where you're no more looking at it. You basically become completely sucked into it. Where you become, and that's called dveikus. Dveikus is that you and it become one. So hearing about something is when you're still distant, you're still far. You're in your town, you're hearing about the king. Someone comes back and says, I was there. They, like the people in the people who lived in the, people didn't travel those days, you know. They lived in a little town, a little hick town somewhere. That's where you were born, that's where you died. Whoever went to see, you know. Someone for whatever reason traveled a few hundred, you know, 200 miles and went to the capital. He comes back and he tells all the simple people, you know, all about the majesty and the beauty of the everybody here, and they're enthralled, they're excited, and they visualize it. I mean, maybe, you know, they try to put together a picture in their head, and they're awed by the richness and the greatness of the king. But they're only hearing about it. But if they make the trek and they go down and they make the pilgrimage, so to speak, and they go up to the capital and they go to see the king, wow. It's like when we went to the Beis HaMikdash. We didn't just hear about godliness, we got to see him. The three pilgrimage holidays, the Chodesh Regalim, we got to see Elokus. So much more power. But then there's the next stage. After you're looking at godliness, at a certain point, you lose sense that you exist at all. You just become one. You're pulled in and you're lost and you become integrated into the infinite. That's Dveikus. One, hearing about godliness is weekday prayer. Shabbos prayer is vision in godliness. And when are we supposed to spiritually reach the state of absolute dveikus in the Eberster, which means to become completely one with him? When are we supposed to reach that? Shabbos by Mincha. Shaloshudas time. That's why we know that the end of Shabbos is the most auspicious time of Shabbos. It's called Raiva Deraiva. It's the will of all wills. Time of the deepest intimacy with God. The whole Shabbos is a preparation for the end of Shabbos, the last, you know, period after Mincha time of Shabbos. Good. So that's the concept of where Shabbos takes you. Shabbos is primarily, and in the Kabbalistic terminology, it's listakala, to look, biyakara de malka, in the glory of the king. But now we'll understand what's the difference between the vision of Shabbos, the looking at the king, that you look at the king on Shabbos, and the looking at the king, in which we actually stare at the king during Shemitah. Because they're both Shabbos. If Shabbos is a time of vision, leading up to Dveikus, the total attachment. So we have to say that there's a difference between the ordinary Shabbos and the yearly Shabbos. Now, based on the Ari, on the Holy Ari that we said earlier, when the Aliyas Olamos, when the connection of all worlds on Shabbos, it's all the way up to the Orein Sof. But on Shemitah, it's only to Malchus, to the Malchus of Atzilus, to the Shechina. And on that level, it stops. Based on that, he explains the difference. He says, when he says you're looking at the king, which king are you looking at? Which king are you looking at? Obviously, king is God. But there is a pasuk that says, we're learning it now in Maimonides, the laws of kings. Soim tasim alecha melech. You should place upon yourself a king. There's a double language. Soim tasim alecha melech. You should place upon yourself a king. So the Zohar says on that. Soim le'ela tasim le'tata. Soim le'ela tasim le'tata. It's a Zohar in Chelek Gimel, Daf Resh Ayin, Hey Amid Beis. What does that mean? There are two kings. There is God, and there is God's king down here on earth. And who's the Eberster's king down, Letata, down here? Malchus of Atzilus. In other words, there is the Keter, the Orein Sof is called Malchus, Malchus the Ein Sof, the infinite king. And then there's the king as it's more related to the world, which is the Shekhinah, Malchus of Atzilus. But that also means Malchus Atzilus as it comes to dwell in this world, which is what? The earthy king, which is David HaMelech, Malchus Beis David, and ultimately King Mashiach. So there is two levels in Soim Tassim. There is put upon yourself a king means submit yourself to God's kingship, but also seek out God's earthy king in this world. Submit to yourself to the king, the earthy king of God, which means God as he's manifesting his kinging in a physical human being down here below, which is Mashiach. And that's why there is a prophecy which tells us in, I think it's in Micha, it says that in the end of days, with Vikshues Elokeim, the Jewish people are going to seek out God as David Malkam and David their king. The Jews are not going to be satisfied just with being, you know, observant Jews and following the law of Hashem. They're going to seek out a relationship with Mashiach Tzidkenu himself. They're going to look to be connected to Hashem's earthy king in this world, which is Mashiach. So he says in the Sefer over there, the Avoda of Shabbos, which is when all worlds are looking and going higher. And where is it going? It's going all the way up to the Ein Sof. It means to look at, to gaze at the Supernal King, to gaze at the Ein Sof, to open up your spiritual eyes in your neshama and gaze at the Eibishter. And what's the listakala b'yakara tamalka? To gaze at Mashiach Tzidkenu. To look with your physical eyes on Mashiach Tzidkenu. And when you look at the at Mashiach Tzidkenu, that's the avoda Shemitah. And he says the avoda is to seek out who Mashiach is. You know I'm going to get excited about something. He says the avoda in Shemitah is to seek out and identify Mashiach Tzidkenu so you can fulfill the mitzvah, soin tasam alecha melech, and enjoy looking at the melech. So he says, no, now we understand. When we do our avoda seeking out Mashiach, which is the avoda that we do in the seventh year, because in the seventh year, where it's lastakola b'yakara d'malka, we gaze at the king. So we look and we seek Mashiach. So when does Mashiach respond? Matzah Shemitah. So once we did our work to seeking out Mashiach, then the Matzah Shemitah, Ben David Ba, Mashiach reveals himself. Because we did our work to look for him. If no one is looking for him, he's not coming. We have to look for him. Point our finger. The words he uses is very good. Just like we pointed our finger by Yamsuf and we say, Zekeli, this is my God. You're pointing with a finger. So the Rebbe kept on saying in 1990, 1991, I think no one was even, we still are such klutzheads. The Rebbe kept on saying that Mashiach will come and we're going to point with our finger and we're going to say, Hinei Zeh Mashiach Bo. And Marabed's boy, the Rebbe kept on saying, we're going to point with our finger saying, Zeh, this is him. So this is the Avodah of Shemitah. It's not stuff. And that's why we're seeing Taka now. Baruch Hashem, there's been a big exodus of Hinei Zeh Mashiach Ba to get over the discomforts and silliness to realize that we're waiting for Mashiach, we're waiting, we're waiting, we're waiting, we're waiting, and we're waiting, and we're waiting, and we're waiting. And we're fakratzed in Golos, who knows how long already, after we were promised that the day Mashiach is supposed to come. We're uncomfortable, okay? So we're waiting. And what is the Avoda? I was so excited when I saw it. Says the avoda in Shemitah is to seek out, to identify, and to point with the finger, just like you're doing a Zekeli with the Eberster, to Mashiach down here. You say, oh, we don't know where Mashiach is until Mashiach comes. Maybe the Eberster says, try to figure it out on your own. Maybe the Eberster is saying, no, for Mashiach to come, you have to figure it out before. You have to, and that's your avoda during Shemitah. You have an entire year of Shemitah, so you can figure it out. And then afterwards, he will reveal himself. That's why b'matzah Shemitah ben David ba. I thought that was a very, very cool explanation, and that satisfies me. So maybe we can skip all the other explanations in between, and this shall do. So may we merit that we shouldn't, once we know already the secret of the eighth year, we shouldn't have to wait till the eighth year. Can already have it in the seventh year. We should see Mashiach Tzidkenu, we should see the Geula, and we should see it now. It's called the Shavsa Ha'aretz.